To discuss this, I'm joined by journalist Alan Nairn. Alan is one of the best investigative journalists in modern U.S. history. When I first got into journalism, he was one of my role models. Since the 1980s, Alan has investigated CIA-backed death squads in Guatemala and El Salvador. He exposed the CIA's death squad in Haiti in 1994. Alan also survived, along with Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, a massacre in East Timor in 1991 at the hands of U.S.-backed Indonesian forces.
The Indonesian army converged in two places.
Hundreds and hundreds of troops.
Some 270 East Timorese were gunned down, and Alan had his skull split open by Indonesian troops wielding U.S.-supplied M16 rifles. Alan has regularly exposed the CIA's role in the killing of civilians and in crushing popular movements. Alan, let's begin with looking at who Trump has tapped. What's your analysis of who these people are and how it's going to impact U.S. policy?
Well, the idea that Trump is more peaceful, a maverick, is just nonsense. His team consists of old establishment killers and neocons and some conspiracy nuts. General Mattis, his Secretary of Defense, was invited to speak at both the Democratic and Republican conventions. He was the preferred candidate for president of Bill Kristol's Never Trump movement. He decided not to take the plunge. Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, is a virtual protege of Jim Baker, the co-chair of the Bush establishment. Vice President Mike Pence was the point man in the House for Dick Cheney, who endorsed Trump. Pence was Cheney's point man in the House on both Iraq and the Patriot Act. And then you have General Flynn and Pompeo, who were rabid right-wing partisans, conspiracy nuts. Flynn is a bitter, harsh critic of Obama. But his criticism is that Obama didn't do enough assassinations. Obama dropped more than 100,000 bombs and missiles. That wasn't enough for Flynn. And Pompeo comes from a similar angle. You know, he wants unbridled surveillance. He wants a domestic massive database on Americans. He wants to expand Guantanamo. He wants more torture. If necessary, he wants to rewrite the Army Field Manual, which would allow more torture, not just by the CIA, which uses it as a guideline, but also within the Army and the armed forces as a whole. When Trump talks about working together with Russia to fight terrorism, that means more operations, more violence. And probably more significantly, the Trump people want to rip off the constraints. They want to adopt essentially the Russian Grozny rules, which essentially says kill them all and kill their families too. General Flynn in particular is a great admirer of that. And General Mattis became famous in the military for his open advocacy of killing. He has a whole string of very colorful quotes where he talks with great gusto about how wonderful it is to kill.
Yeah, it's fun to shoot some people.
Yeah. And in particular, as an illustration of his approach, he presided over the Mukarrabi wedding party massacre in Iraq up near the border with Syria in 2004, in which more than 40 people were civilians at a wedding party, were massacred by his U.S. forces. And when he was asked about it, he was unapologetic. He was asked, how long did you deliberate before ordering the attack? He said 30 seconds. So the idea that this is a shift in a less, and you could go on that list, in some kind of less bloody direction, is just not accurate.
Is there really, in your view, a rift between Trump and the CIA, the likes of which is just nonstop being pushed by the Democrats and on television?
No, not on significant matters. There certainly is on the emotional level. There are tremendous hurt feelings. The CIA people are furious. Nobody likes to be called compared to the Nazis. But on basic matters of policy, whether you're allowed to kill civilians, whether aggressive, not legally sanctioned actions in foreign countries are permitted, they're in complete agreement. It's ironic that Trump is making this move of entente with Russia at the moment when Russia has temporarily surpassed the U.S. because of their operations in Syria, as the number one mass killer of civilians in the world. I mean, for decades, the U.S. has clearly and unambiguously held that title because of all the paramilitary and regular army and intelligence forces around the world that the U.S. supports who kill civilians. But now, because of what Russia has done on the side of Assad in Syria and with their own direct bombing operations, which indiscriminately crush civilians, they have clearly surpassed the U.S. as the number one mass killer at this moment. But you have to keep your eye on the hard facts. And the hard facts are that Trump is clearly going to continue the U.S. policy of being willing to kill civilians. And if anything, his alliance with Russia will only make that worse.
Given that you've spent basically your entire adult life pursuing the CIA and its clients, pursuing generals and war criminals and paramilitaries, what do you say to people who seem to be now promoting the idea that the CIA, that they're the good guys?
You shouldn't be defending people who kill civilians. The liberal and democratic shift away from probing criticism of the U.S. military and the CIA started years ago. It started in the 80s, really. And for just tactical political reasons, they decided to start celebrating the military and the intelligence agencies. And now it's reached this really absurd point where, for one thing, they're making a differentiation between Trump and the intelligence agencies, when on matters of substance there is none. And for another, they're holding these agencies which systematically commit crimes against defenseless civilians up as paragons. And it's just nuts. And, you know, I think one of many reasons why Trump was able to break through politically, in addition to his being a master propagandist and a master liar, I mean, he ranks with the master propagandists of history, with Goebbels, with Bernays, with Roger Ailes. I mean, he's up in that pantheon. But one reason was that he would occasionally blurt out truths that hit home with people. Like when in the Republican debate, he stood up and started denouncing the invasion of Iraq and saying it was based on lies. We now have this situation where some people think that Trump is somehow going to shake up the system for the better. And all indications are that he's going to shake it up for the worse, because this is really the most radical elements of the oligarchy, kind of the criminal fringe of the U.S. oligarchy, the crudest criminal fringe, embodied in Trump himself and his old associates, taking over the government. And they're basically unconstrained. They will be especially unconstrained 2 years from now if they're able to win a veto-proof Senate majority, which they may well, because it just so happens there are many more Democratic seats exposed than there are Republican seats in that Senate election. And if he succeeds in getting in first his new Supreme Court nominee to replace Scalia, which will restore the old balance, which will put Kennedy in the driver's seat in the Supreme Court. But then if he gets a second Supreme Court nomination, and I predict that in short order, they're going to start a massive campaign against Ruth Bader Ginsburg, attacking her as old, crazy, infirm, has to be moved off the bench. Remember years ago, there was the rightist campaign to impeach Justice Douglas. I wouldn't be surprised to see a similar move made against Bader Ginsburg.
When Trump chose Mike Pence, I've been looking at Pence for a number of years. Some of the things that came to my mind were Pence's incredible proximity to Dick Cheney, right. His relationship with the neocons and with the real career lifer power brokers like Cheney and Rumsfeld, who really sought out on one of their life's missions, which was to create a dictatorship of the executive branch when it came to counterterrorism policy, foreign policy, military policy, CIA. They wanted nothing to do with oversight from the Congress. When you heard that Mike Pence was selected as Trump's running mate, what message do you think that was sending to the establishment in the national security apparatus and within the broader Republican Party?
Well, I think the message was, don't worry, I'm one of you. Appearances to the contrary and insults to the
country.
Well,
I'd like to know the story of how this happened, because I don't think it was, you know, Trump went through a Rolodex and said, oh, let's get my buddy Mike Pence here. It seemed to me like there was a deal made where this is your running mate. Because I don't think Trump even knew much about Mike Pence at all before.
Well, you know, who knows how it came about? There's always very complex bargaining involved in these things, and there are all these reports saying at the last minute Trump had regrets and wanted to pick Chris Christie, who was kind of his buddy. But Trump dragged the ultra-right oligarchs kicking and screaming into power. They could never win an election on their own. Paul Ryan is never going to be elected president on his platform of destroying Social Security and Medicare and all programs for the poor. That's a loser. So in order to implement their program, they need a degree of popular support. And Trump provided that, but he provided that in ways that weren't entirely to their liking. For example, they had to sacrifice the TPP. It was a painful but lucrative bargain for them because, yes, that hurts their interests to an important extent, but they get even more back in massive corporate and estate and personal income tax cuts and in a massive wiping away of environmental, labor, consumer protection, anti-discrimination, financial regulations. It's a huge net plus for the corporate class. Trump was constantly denouncing the rigging of the system. His basic message was, the system's rigged. Our system is a killer system, and it's corrupt. All of which is true, except the rigging took place in the opposite direction, which he portrayed. But it's uncomfortable for the establishment types to hear that, especially coming out of the mouth of their own candidate. And Pence was, you know, a bit of a reassurance to them, I think, that don't worry, it's going to be okay. You have your inside man. And you see, as he's picking his cabinet, there's no one, absolutely no one in there who clashes with their program.
What about Trump's relationship with the heads of state of other nations? Specifically, I'm referring to the longstanding U.S. system of client states around the world. You know, one of the first things they did was to throw their support, the Trump administration, behind General Sisi in Egypt. What do you see happening with the Trump administration's relationship with some of these key client states around the world?
Part of Trump's attack on the existing world order, the order that was created by the U.S. In the wake of World War II, Trump attacks that whole world order. But he attacks it because, in his view, it's not harsh enough. It's not repressive enough. Trump says that the U.S. is being ripped off by its clients, by its satellite states, by its allies. So he wants to impose even harsher exploitation. In Jerusalem, Trump is talking about moving the U.S. Embassy there, a move that is not going to go unanswered by the Palestinians in the street. Trump is moving toward a system where force is used more directly. When it comes to repressive rulers like al-Sisi of Egypt and Duterte, who's democratically elected, but who got elected on a death squad platform, and he and his forces have so far murdered thousands of people. What we can expect to see is that forces like this, death squad forces, repressive militaries, repressive paramilitaries, which have been backed for many decades by the U.S. The U.S. has already been backing these forces. The U.S. will continue backing these forces, but without constraint. Now, with Trump, I don't think the reaction among the worldwide killer forces has been that immediate, partly because around the world, a lot of people are a little confused about Trump. But as it becomes clear, as people like Pompeo and Flynn and Mattis go into action, I think we'll see a similar increase of killings by local death squad and military and paramilitary forces, just because they feel unconstrained, just because they feel the support from Washington, as opposed to what has been the traditional U.S. posture for a number of years, which is give them weapons and training with one hand, but admonish them with the other. The Obama administration was helping Saudi Arabia, the actual U.S. personnel there, helping them with targeting of their bombing runs, where they were hitting one Yemeni civilian target after another.
And refueling the Saudi planes.
And refueling, and it was U.S. munitions and U.S. planes. And
cluster bombs.
In this mass slaughter operation. But as some of the worst atrocities got publicity, the Obama administration felt compelled to pull back some of the advisors and to, you know, issue critical statements, even though the flow of military aid was never completely stopped. It was just temporarily cut back. Now, that
the audacity of Samantha Power, you know, who was Obama's ambassador to the UN, I mean, the kind of gall to stand there and denounce the war crimes that are being committed with the full support of the United States. It's not stunning, but it's just dripping blood of hypocrisy.
Yeah, but hypocrisy has a certain virtue, and that is at least it's advancing or acknowledging and to a certain extent advancing some good values.
Well, that's kind of a metaphor for the entire Obama time in office.
Well, the recent path of the U.S. establishment, because some constraints have been imposed on them by popular pressure, by human rights activism. So they feel obliged to say publicly, yes, killing civilians is a bad thing, but under the table, here are some guns, and we see you killed 1,000 civilians last month. Okay, here's some more guns. Maybe try to be a little more careful. It's been that mixed stance, and that kind of mixed stance is something that local generals sometimes find infuriating, but even more significantly, it's something that they find they can exploit politically. So you have these officers standing up and demagogically denouncing the United States because the United States is criticizing them on human rights grounds, even though they're pocketing one U.S. weapons shipment after another, and they're all going to Fort Benning and Fort Bragg for their training, and they have CIA personnel sitting in their intelligence centers helping them with their operations. But the Trump people clearly favor an approach which strips away the hypocrisy and in a more straightforward fashion says, support our friends like al-Sisi, like Duterte. And what de facto that means is a full speed ahead on the killing without constraint.
All right. Alan, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Alan Nairn is an investigative journalist. His website is News and Comment. It can be found at alannairn.org.